a better way. You don't have to be another face.
And we are live with episode 3462 of the Survival Podcast. We are going to be talking today with Jason Adkins. He's been part of this community so long that his story begins with what we call the Jetta days. Now, there's people out there going, what the hell are the Jetta days? That sounds like a Volkswagen sale or something. I used to drive a little Volkswagen Jetta because I had like a 55-mile commute, and that's where I started doing the show. And Jason was listening all the way back then. He built his life up as a prepper, made some big changes in his life, but then like many times, the shit hit the fan. And as I say all the time, and I mean all the time, when people talk about the shit hitting the shit is the fan for somebody every single day of the year. And sometimes those things come in kind of a cascade of events. And you know what I'm talking about, where you just feel like, man, I can't get ahead. And it just sets you back. But in that situation, you're better off being a prepper than not being a prepper. And so Jason's story that we're going to talk about today is not a pity party. It is, built up my life, everything seemed to go wrong at the same time. It set me back, and now I'm rebuilding. And I think that's an important thing for us to look at. And some of the disasters that we'll talk about here, are, in Jason's words, in his application to be a guest, mundane disasters. The funny thing is that word, that exact word, is in my 12 tenets of preparedness, to prepare for the mundane disasters. And the things that are just pragmatic preparations are as important as some of the stuff that we think of being more like end of the world stuff. So we're going to have that discussion with Jason. I'm really looking forward to it in just a minute. These are my favorite interviews, honestly, are just people out of the audience. They're not here to try to push some big website or something. They just want to tell the story of real impact, of real life. I think we learn the most from that. With that said, let's go ahead before we do and take care of our sponsors. Sponsor of the day, number one today, John Pugliano with the Wealth Steading Podcast. His latest podcast episode, Gaslighting Economic Data. You need to listen to it. His podcasts are really short, guys. They're like somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes usually. He only puts out like one every week or two, but they're really worth listening to. Now, the thing about John is John's one of us. He's part of the community. I've been working with him one way or another since 2010. He is an investment manager. He's a fantastic investment manager, and it's because he's not a financial liar. You know, it's because he actually made himself into a liquid millionaire through investing before he took a single client. And now he also puts out the information and the things that he talks about on his podcast. You should totally check it out at wealthsteading.com, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow a garden in your backyard. Next up today, learn from legends of self-reliance with a free webinar series. Nicole Awesome Sauce is at it again, putting together one of these awesome events that she puts together so often. This is a 5-day, it's 1 hour in the evening. It's kind of late in the evening, so if you're at work or whatever, you'll have time to get home and see it. And it's going to be some of the coolest people that have ever been involved with the Self-Reliance Festival, including Joel Saladin. And he has his presentation you're going to be able to check out called Homestead Tsunami. You don't want to miss that. You get to interact with people, ask questions, form connections, and learn more about Self-Reliance Festival all at the same time. And the best part of it, March 17th through 21, 100% free, no cost to you. Just go, click the link, and sign up. And if you're like, where's the link? Well, if you go down to the video notes, if you're on the live stream, there's a link right there. It says exactly what it is. And if you are listening to the audio, you go by my website, thesurvivalpodcast.com, and just take a look at today's show notes. And down where it says sponsors for this podcast, you'll see all the links that I just mentioned and lots of other delicious, yummy links that you know about are in the video notes and the podcast notes as well. With that, let's go ahead and bring on our special guest, Jason Adkins. Jason, bro, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Good to be with you, Jack.
I'm glad you're here with us, man. Before we get into, like, your story, can you just start out with, like, before you ever heard of prepping or TSPC or any of this stuff, just like, what was your, you know, you kind of, like all people, you go to school, you grow up, you go get a job. What was kind of your professional background and your place in life before we got into any of this stuff?
Well, I've been in the insurance industry for, about 16, 18 years now, and done a few other things, but that was kind of, you know, what I was doing professionally. You know, I'd always been in the kind of, my dad was a welder and machinist, so I grew up, we had a metal fab shop in the backyard. So I got all the learning how to fix stuff and do stuff from him. And then my love of the outdoors, fishing, hunting, camping, I got from my grandfather. So I kind of had a background in those areas, which, you know, is kind of related to preparedness. It's in the same arena anyway. And, so I was, actually recovering from my first back surgery around 2008, laid up in bed watching Netflix, and I saw this movie. I don't remember the name of it. It was about peak oil, right? I think it was Collapse maybe or something like that. Michael Rapaport or Rapaport. Anyway, I watched this movie and it kind of got me thinking about things. And then a few days later, I found, looking online, I found the Survival Podcast. And I think I started listening. It was right at the tail end or right after you'd gone to a studio or using a mic instead of the car. But then I went back and listened to the original episodes. And that was the beginning of my prepping journey, so to speak.
And I was just pointing out to people, I should have mentioned this when I introduced you, but it slipped my mind. You actually were on the show quite a long time ago, because we're at episode 3462 today, but back episode 1290,
yep.
Just a few years ago, right? Just
about a decade ago, yeah.
A few plus a few plus a few is nine, right? So that's
right.
it's somewhere in that range of like a few cubed. Jason was on to talk about insurance as a pragmatic prep, and I will make sure I add a link if I don't forget to the notes today, or if you want to hear from him all those years ago, blast from the past, you can go listen to it. Sooner or later, we'll get there with Friday Flashbacks as we're doing that little program. But
right.
You grew up in the city, so what aspects of your life contributed to your mindset for preparedness? Love of the outdoors and stuff like that. How'd that transition come?
I grew up in the city. I did spend a lot of time in the country. My grandfather had land way out in the rural areas in South Georgia, and I would go out there a lot with him. So I had some exposure to, you know, farming and gardening and livestock and stuff like that, fishing and hunting. And I always loved all that stuff. And then, you know, I think it was that watching that movie is kind of what got my mindset going towards, you know, what if things go wrong? And one of the things I remember standing out the most about your message was something that really resonated with me and something that I use. I didn't try to do a lot of proselytizing and preparedness. You know, if the topic came up, I would do what I could to, you know, talk to people. But what you would say was, you know, your tagline, whether time get tough or even if they don't. And that really made a lot of sense to me. You know, I mean, what doesn't make sense about getting out of debt, about having, you know, 30 days worth of food on hand, having, you know, contingency plans, having a blackout tip, the lights go out, all this stuff, you know, it just clicked with me. It made total sense. And I was living in a suburb at the time, but I had always kind of wanted to get out on some land, you know, and get out of the neighborhood. And then the whole preparedness aspect of it just really supercharged that desire. And one thing I will say too, before I forget, is having had been listening to you for as long as I had before I got my property, I really knew what I wanted. I know what to look for, what I didn't want. And a lot of that came through, you know, listening to you and talking about the homesteading, the permaculture, all that. I didn't know what the hell a swale was before I started listening to Jack, you know? So, that helped me really formulate exactly what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go.
Other than my show and this video, were there any other things that kind of sparked you to become a prepper and a homesteader?
Of course, this was right at the end of 2008, of course, right after the housing collapse. And I had gone into insurance sales around 2007, and that timing could not have been worse. And so I'm looking at all this economic stuff, and, you know, I'm fairly market savvy and was paying attention to the markets and things like that. And I knew, and I remember also you kept saying, you know, we're going to load the tables up again. Like, this is probably not the end game. And that is exactly what has happened.
Yeah.
We've had, you know, 12, 13 years of loading the tables up again. But just looking at, you know, the consequences for not being ready for major things happening, to me, outweigh the time sink or effort or whatever it takes to kind of get yourself ready for what may eventually happen. So, you know, I was listening to your show, I was reading other blogs, stuff like that, and just the more I read and the more I researched, the more I realized, holy crap, I'm not ready, and we as a society are not ready for any real hard times. And I just wasn't comfortable staying in that spot.
Boy, in your statement there, if we needed proof of it, we got it at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020.
And absolutely.
One thing that baffled me during that was how many people in my audience were completely freaked out about not being prepared. And they were emailing me like, I can't get 50 pounds of wheat right now. And I'm like, how long does it take you to eat 50 pounds of wheat on a regular basis? And they were totally overreacting. They were having the wrong impulse to the situation we were dealing with. And then the common people were completely baffling. The obsession with bottled water and toilet paper was absolutely, it's like, this isn't a hurricane. This is a bunch of government officials overreacting to something that they shouldn't be overreacting to. And I caught a lot of heat when I started saying that. I mean, I lost a lot of listeners, honestly. I think slowly many of them, I kind of recognize the names and the handles as they've trickled back in and go, gee, mm-hmm. The jerk was right again about it. But, you know, just saying that you can relax and it's okay and stop freaking out freaked people out. That's what you saw back. Well, none of us, I think, saw that being a big one. I've always said a pandemic could be a big one, but I never thought a so-called pandemic could be overreacted to at a global level. Right. And it was kind of insane to watch people completely lose their shit, including the people that should have been most prepared.
Right. The people who had the time. That's the thing is it's, you know, any day we're not living in some kind of emergency is time that's still available to get ready for those things. And
correct.
I remember when COVID hit, I was out of my homestead by then, you know, middle of divorce and all that mess. And I remember telling people, all this proves to me, because COVID was a joke, if we have a real pandemic, if we have a real something that's, you know, not too deadly where it kills everybody right away, you know, right there in the middle, we're really, really in trouble. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple people that had given me some flack, you know, years prior to being a prepper. And I called them up. I'm like, hey, I got a whole bunch of toilet paper. How about you? You know, I mean, it was just it was a nothing burger other than the government overreaction and the overstretch. And I'm sure we can have a whole show on that. But, yeah, exactly. That was a test run. That was a warning shot is what that was in my opinion.
One of the things that's made this podcast so worth doing is the community around it. And so I don't get to talk to people often on the show, especially who have been around since, you know, almost the beginning and have been through the various forms of community we had. You know, we used to have a really active forum, and as social media took off, that kind of spread out against multiple platforms and all. But you've been around since, like, all the communication was in blog comments, then it was on a forum. Then it moved to social media. So you've interacted with other community members, I know, for a long time. Can you kind of mention some of the things you remember about that time from the show and from community interaction, support from other members, things like that?
Yeah, and exactly. I was big on the forum. You know, I was in very active on the forum and Zello channel back when that was a thing. And I remember my thoughts on it are that at that point, Jack, I don't think we had come so far into the negative side of the whole social media and online interaction. Like, I think people weren't as vitriolic as they are now yet, you know, and of course, also being the community of like-minded people that, you know, that your community, your audience is just, it's just a bunch of good people. And I remember it being a largely pleasurable, pleasant, and extremely informative, you know, just a great sense of community. God, I learned so much between your show and then the stuff in the forums. And I mean, it was just it was a really cool time before, you know, we got into where we are now with the polarization and everybody at each other's throat. It was kind of like the last vestige of decent communication between like-minded people, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, you had some stuff go wrong, and I think that's an important thing for people to hear about. So you kind of tell us about that. And, you know, I think in your app you said something, I won't get too much in the weeds, and I get that. But, you know, don't hold back, because I think everybody in life has had some point in their life. And if you haven't, guess what? You will.
Yes.
Where you just feel like you got punched in the mouth and you hit the ground and you get up and somebody kicks you in the back, and then you rely on this thing and it broke, and then something else happens. And we've all had those things where you're like, okay, what's next? And from what I can see, you had a real hell of a ride with stuff like that.
My elevator speeches, I just tell people I went through the trials of Job, you know, in about a three, four year period. So fast forward from 10 years later, I'm living in North. I was near Savannah. I moved to North Georgia up near the mountains, had my homestead, 3 acres, 13 laying hens, you know, bit huge garden, was had a prepper's pantry. And I mean, I was on my way. Right. So a few things happened. My wife had some issues, now ex-wife, and that's all I'll say about that. But she lost a job, and starting about 2018, my wife lost her job. My dad was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia and started going downhill very quickly. I mentioned earlier I'd had my first back surgery in 08. Well, in 18 and 19, I had 3 more back surgeries. My back got so bad. There were times I was lying in the floor of my bedroom in the fetal position, literally wanting to die. And that was from physical pain. I was, you know, pain management, epidurals, pain medication, spinal cord stimulator, just, you know, terrible back problems. So all this is going on at the same time. While I'm out recovering from my third surgery, my employer, major nationwide, nationwide insurance company, large insurance company, lays off about 5,000 people. I was one of them.
For those of you like, what's he doing there? He's not giving the name of the company. You realize Nationwide is the name of a company. So he's saying Nationwide. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. So they laid off a bunch of people and completely revamped their business model. And so I lost my job. I was fortunate that I saw the writing on the wall and I was able to sell my house before I lost it. So, you know, I was able to do that. So all of that stuff going on, then I have to move out of the house post back surgery. Right. And I mean, it's not like moving out of an apartment. You know, I've got garages full of power tools and shop tools and garden equipment and lawnmower, everything you need to run a homestead. I had everything, you know, plus all the prep stuff. Well, I didn't have as much prep stuff because I actually ate my preps during that financially difficult time. You know, I built a big rotator can shelf with the canned goods. I mean, we ate that stuff up, you know, and I mean, it was just, I thought, wow, it sure does suck that I have all these food and supplies when I'm low on money. You know, Jack's a jerk. And we had been working on paying down debt and that kind of thing and had come a long way in that. And, but it's just all these things happened at the same time. And then, you know, now I'm going through a divorce. Now I'm going through the custody stuff. It was just a big shit sandwich for a couple of years there. And it was really hard to keep going, you know, and especially after having worked so long to get, you know, I was married. I had 2 daughters. I had the family I wanted. I had the house I wanted. We weren't wealthy, but we were doing okay. I mean, I had a great life, Jack, and it all went to shit real fast. And the periods after, the year or two after that was just reeling, you know, like trying to figure out what is my life now? How do I redefine? I had to recreate my own identity. Who am I now? What I had all this stuff that I wanted, these things that were important to me, and a lot of it's gone now. And so, but just as importantly as the, you know, having preps and having some money and savings and things like that, it was the mindset, you know, and you say all the time, the greatest prep is in between your ears. But the things I had learned and the philosophies from you and from other people, you know, about just how to deal with these adversities and the mindset of your life is what you make it. The government's not coming to save you. You know, I just had to pull myself up by the bootstraps and get out of that. And you know, now a couple of years, a few years past that, I'm rebuilding, you know, I've got my kids with me and we're healthy and happy and I'm starting to, you know, look for another homestead again. So it was a rough period. And, but I learned so much from you and the community and just, you know, you said so many things that I could touch on, you know, but just like the whole, your whole mindset shifts when you start thinking about all the things that could go wrong. And then also just making my life better, regardless of whether things go wrong or not, you know, and just the shift in mindset was so important through all of that.
Yeah, I think mindset is one of the most important things we talk about, and maybe because of that, we don't talk about it enough. Everybody wants to know, what do I store? What do I grow? Where do I put my money? But as you're pointing out, you can have a lot of things and lose them. And you can have a lot of things for preparedness, but then when an emergency comes, you end up consuming them and then they're gone and they need replacement. Right. And usually they need replacement at a time when you're in the least prepared mode to do the replacing. And now you've been through it. So you're like, well, if anything happens now while I'm vulnerable, it's going to be worse. And it's because it is. And having the right mindset is how you get through that, because what it's hard to remind yourself of sometimes, in my experience, when you are a prepared person and shit does go wrong, you don't realize how much better off you were because you were prepared, because you're worried about the problem. It's hurting you right now. So like when somebody's standing on your hand, it's hard to think about the fact that they're not standing on your neck.
Yes.
Right. So even though you're better than you would have been, it's still a problem. And that mindset is how we pull ourselves up out of that darkness, because that's where it starts to feel like, why the f*** do I bother? That's how it starts to feel, right? Like, what is the point here? And sometimes we do it for little bitty things. I remember I had a really good month a couple of years ago doing some affiliate sales for Paul Wheaton, made a nice little chunk of extra money, and it was almost the exact amount of the cost of replacing the well when the well blew up, the well pump blew up, right? And I was bitching about it, and I finally said, you got to shut up, stop bitching, because had you not made that money, the well would have blown up anyway, and you would have to get other money to pay for it. And so when things really do cascade like you're talking about, it's much easier to get into that spot. And mindset is probably the most important weapon you have at that point, because if you choose to develop it, you won't lose that.
Right.
You can't lose your mindset and your knowledge unless you have a brain injury or something like that. You can always figure a way out if you keep working at it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, especially when you lose, you know, I had a family at home with me. I had my dad, who had always been one of my go-to guys. I lost that. You know, I lost the family. I lost the extended family that came from the marriage, and all, you know, all of these contacts and connections and resources are suddenly gone. It's a tough thing to deal with. And when your whole, every aspect of your life virtually is turned upside down at one time. And this had nothing to do with pandemics, financial collapse, EMPs, none of that. This was just life stuff that happens, you know, what you talked about so much. And, you know, the knowledge and I'm telling you, if I hadn't had the mindset that I had been developing, I don't know that I'd made it through it. I mean, I had some seriously dark days, you know, and coming back to what you were talking about, how I had all this stuff in place as far as preps and preparedness. And then, you know, now I'm moving into a rental place. I don't have any of that stuff anymore. And of course, I had kind of, when I was going through the thick of it, you know, I wasn't active in the preparing. I was surviving. I mean, that's all I was doing, was surviving. And then, you know, looking at how all the stuff that's been going on lately, I started, you know, once I got back on my feet and caught my breath and started paying attention again, you know, I've been following AI and then all, you know, the world's on fire, all the wars and the financials. I mean, there's so much. And I thought, you know, I'm starting to get those 2007, 2008 feelings again, seriously. And this time things are a lot worse in many different regards than they were then, you know, the federal deficit and all that stuff. And I mean, there's so much stuff. And I thought, you know, okay, it's time to really start getting back in gear, because I think we're in for some tough times. And it's just, you know, getting back in this mindset and trying to start rebuilding what I had before. It's top of mind for me, certainly, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you on the future, like, unfortunately, I have this track record of being right. And, you know, mm-hmm. you mentioned earlier that I said they're going to load the tables up, start the band, bop, 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 bop again, and that then it would end badly. And I think we're in this kind of end stage point for this economic model. And I can tell you that, but I can't tell you exactly what they're going to do to try to fix it. I can just tell you that it won't work. It will have to evolve into something else. And everybody's shrieking CBDCs right now. But that's not really changing the economic model. That's just changing how the money is spent and controlled. Like, if you're still creating it in a fractional reserve system, and in this one that already happened, you're still looking at $34 trillion in debt. You're still looking at an interest payment on the debt that exceeds the budget for the Department of Defense. And if we keep going the way we are, the interest on the debt will exceed the cost of Social Security and Medicare.
Yes.
Like, that can't, I don't know exactly how that burns down, but I know that it can't continue.
It can't. And I, you know, I think that one of the simplest ways to sum it up is, you know, to use a financial metaphor for the whole system, is we've been running up the credit card, and I think we finally reached the limit. I think the creditors are going to start calling, so to speak. And, you know, it's just, there's so much stuff out there. I think you're right, though. I think it's too late. Like, I remember you talking, you know, years ago about how the political parties are two sides of the same coin. And honestly, I didn't see it yet. I did not see it. I thought, man, I don't know about that. I see it now. I see it. They're all, you know, they want the wars to continue so they can, make money, so the defense contractors can make the money and they can line their pockets and all of this stuff. I mean, it's so easy to see when you start looking at it. You know, it's just the world is on fire, man.
You know, when you say that's like the uniparty or whatever, I understand how people have a hard time seeing it, because you're like, okay, well, at least one side's not talking about transitioning our youth. At least one side's not, you know, doing whatever other stupid, you know, wokeism or whatever is all. And, you know, at least this side's not screaming to raise taxes. And
right.
I just say the way to look at that is think about the spectrum inside a party.
Mm-hmm.
So look, if you look at the Democrat Party, as lunatic as they are, the people you always see the right hold up as an example are the lunatics of the left. The Democratic Party itself goes, yeah, those people are crazy. Mm-hmm. Right. And then inside the Republican Party, the same thing happens. The most lunatic level shit is what the other side points out, because they're at war with each other. It's like two mafia families. But in the end, it's one big Corleone clan, right? Like, and that's all you're seeing is a greater spectrum, but it's still all the same mob.
It is.
And that mob has made its entire existence based on the concept that we'll fix your problems, and they can't fix anything. And there is a point, if you run a system that way long enough, poop. Like, it's ain't going to go away. It's just going to change. And that's why we have to be prepared, is for change. Like, you know, when you get a storm, you get a hurricane, what it is a change in the landscape. And that change in the landscape might be your house going flat or being buried underwater. But it's a change. That's what you're actually dealing with. And you don't ever know what that – like, you know the most common things that happen in a hurricane, but you don't actually know exactly what's going to happen. We've had them come in and just – not supposed to be that bad, and they put a whole, you know, a whole county underwater. We've had come in, and they're like, oh, this is going to drown the whole county, and the whole backside of the hurricane falls apart as it hits land. Like, you don't ever know what that change is going to be. You just know there will be one.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you don't know what's coming. You don't ever know what's coming, and it's just, you know, I think one of the hardest things, well, it wasn't that, you know, any of those things that happened to me, Jack, would have been bad enough by themselves, you know, but when you start stacking this stuff on, and it's like, okay, you know, you find out what you're made of and how much you can really take. It's just so much stuff to think about, and you don't ever know when it's coming. That's the whole thing about preparedness, is you don't know. It could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be a year, it could be never. You just don't know, but you have to be ready for when it comes, because if it comes and you're not ready, whatever the situation may be, job loss, what, you know, economic collapse, whatever, it's, if you're not ready, you're going to be in trouble, you know, and you have to have the right mindset and the right skill sets and all of the things that you talk about, you know, it's all important.
Absolutely, man. So what have you learned, and how has your life changed since this cascade of disasters has run its course, hopefully?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it looks like we're on the upswing, so I'm gonna knock on wood. But you know, this has been such a in so many different ways, such a journey of I don't want to get too frou-frou here or out in the left field, but I mean, I've learned so much about myself, and I have learned that it's okay for my ideas about things and my opinions on things to change. You know, it's a lot of the stuff that you talk about, the mindsets, things that we were raised up believing. You know, I grew up in the South, and there's a lot of stuff that you know, was a lot more prevalent back then than it is now. And I've just grown so much, and my friend networks have expanded. I've opened myself up to only so many different kinds of people. I've, you know, seriously, I forgot the other thing. I went through a faith crisis during this time, you might say. I was born and raised Southern Baptist, and I don't believe in that anymore. And listen, if you don't think that that is a major thing to go through and something hard to work through to, and I don't mean to offend anybody that's Christian. You do believe what you want to believe. But for me, I felt like I had been indoctrinated my entire life. And if you don't think that's something that's difficult to divest yourself of, and then I'm just for me, you know, just from, that was a whole, I mean, that was a major life change for me. And all this was going on at the same time, you know, but I have learned so much about myself, and I feel like that I have so much better understanding of who I am and who I want to be now than I did before I went through all of the stuff, because you really have to do some soul searching, you know, and some introspection when you're going through this kind of stuff. And so I guess that would be one of the biggest positives coming out of all this, you know, is that I have grown as a person, and my mind has been open to so many new and different things that it wasn't before. You know?
And I think some people may have just heard what you said and thought of like the book of Job and these things killed your faith. And it doesn't sound like that's what you're saying to me. It sounds like that is a separate issue, that you've looked back at this form of organized faith and said, this just doesn't make sense. And again, I don't want to offend anybody either. I don't want to take anybody's faith from them. You believe what you believe, because of all the things we can argue about, what you believe is probably the least important, right? Because what you believe doesn't actually affect me. Unless you start using government to force it on me, I don't care what you believe.
Right.
But I went through that too. You know, I grew up Catholic. I had one side of my family was Roman Catholic, and my Ukrainian side were Ukrainian Catholic. And Ukrainian Catholic is like, you take all the guilt that's in the Jewish faith, the Catholic faith, and the Eastern Orthodox faith, and you stick it all together, and that's Ukrainian Catholicism. And it's actually the Ukrainian church, Catholic church, is headquartered in Greece, which makes no sense without a very long lesson, longer than Putin gave Tucker. I'm just going to say that I had that same thing happen to me. And it is like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. But it was such a piece of who you were, your identity, your life, your community. In a way, it's kind of like divorcing someone or ending a long-term relationship with a romantic partner, because no matter how angry you were or upset or how bad your life was, at least when you stuck your arm out in the bed at night and put it down, they were there. And it's kind of like anybody that's ever lost a relationship like that, or even sometimes it's just that person went on a vacation, you know, went somewhere on a business trip without you, or you had to travel and you just out of habit did it. And that moment that it hits, you're like, ugh. Right. Because you thought you were dreaming or something and it's gone.
Right.
I don't know how to explain it to someone else that hasn't gone through it, but it's kind of like that.
It is. Absolutely. And it's not just the, you know, having to wrestle with. For me, it was finally admitting the doubts that I'd always had and allowing those thoughts, exploring the conversations and the questions that I had never did. You know, you're not supposed to ask. But I mean, if you think it doesn't affect your social structure and your relationships too, you know, I mean, it changes everything. You know, it really does. It changes your whole outlook. And, a lot of people have asked me, well, you are said, you know, well, I just think you're angry at God. Like, no, that's not it at all. I just don't, you know, I just have, I don't believe what I used to believe. That's, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But when you really start digging into things and really asking those hard questions, you know, and when somebody's answer is, well, that's just what I believe. And I said, well, you know, any cult member can say the same exact thing. So that doesn't really hold water with me anymore. You know, I just believe that. Okay. Well, you can believe the earth's flat too, but that doesn't mean you're right. you know. So.
I mean, you're right. I had people tell me that, you know, after I left Catholicism, if you had just had a better catechism, right? Like, so all what you're saying is if I was more efficiently brainwashed,
right,
then I wouldn't have made my own decision. And they're like, well, you're saying everything I believe is wrong. I'm not. I'm saying I don't believe it.
That's right.
And I have no desire to brainwash you to my belief. Like, you can brainwash somebody into believing something that's true.
Yes.
It's still brainwashing. You know, if a person really doesn't believe that, let's say a person really believes the earth's flat.
Yeah.
You can either convince them by logic that they're wrong, or you can brainwash them into believing the truth.
Right.
And so I'm not a fan of, I'm all for logical debate.
Yes.
I'm all for fact-based debate. I'm all for mutual respect. I am not for brainwashing. And someone asked, and I don't mean to speak for you, but I took a stab at it here. Nikos said, why did he feel like he was indoctrinated? And I just answered really for myself here, and you can correct it if I'm wrong, but because he was told to believe things that he believes were not true at a time when he was trusting others with the truth. When you're a parent telling a kid a thing, you have to be cognitive of a thing that they completely believe whatever you say because you're mom and dad.
Right.
And they'll form into a young adult that will believe that. And I'm not saying not to share your faith with your kids. I'm just saying that if you do it the wrong way and they decide it's not for them, it can be very detrimental to your relationship to them at that point. And they're always going to be your son or daughter. So you need to think about how you do things, because I had some pretty up, it wasn't necessarily parents, they had their own problems, but I had some very upset family members. I mean, I grew up in a family where whenever you saw like your aunts and stuff, all my aunts would be like, we're praying for you to be a priest, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a lot of shit to throw at a 12-year-old, right? Like, and they were praying, and I know now why they were doing it. I'm like, what's wrong with these people? They're doing it because like the families in this particular form of Catholicism in that particular part of the world seem to have this feeling, if you had a priest in the family, you had like an inside guy.
Right.
Right. When you had an inside guy, when you died, he was going to get you in, you know, either get you straight in the gates or shorten your time in purgatory, you know. And people might laugh at that, but literally within the Catholic Church, there are ceremonies to reduce time in purgatory, and they cost money.
That's the interesting part, isn't it?
Yeah, it costs money. You have to give money to the church for them to do the thing that helps your passed on relative shorten that time in purgatory, and you know, things like that were part. And I don't want to go too far down that subject, because there's going to be somebody soon telling us how wrong we are. And again, Jason and I don't care what you believe, and we don't want you to care what we believe. We're just having a discussion about the social ramifications when you're deeply ingrained in anything, but especially a religion, when you walk away from it. I don't know if you've ever watched the documentaries, I guess they're documentary series, whatever, by Leah Remini about Scientology.
Yes. Going clear.
When somebody leaves the church, like, they just destroy them and they refuse to allow any contact. And as bad as that looks, when you think about it, you go, well, like, we just don't do it as aggressively. But it's the same kind of thing, like, oh, he's not, you know, he doesn't go to church no more.
We do it tacitly, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny you mentioned Scientology, because I was going to say, you know, it's funny when you start getting into the money aspect of things, because Scientology, I mean, these people spend hundreds of the people that can afford it, hundreds of thousands of dollars for their testing and calibration, whatever they do.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing, and this is what I'll say, again, I don't begrudge anybody for believing what you believe, you know, but what I will say is the thing about indoctrination versus teaching or learning is any kind of teaching or learning will stand up to questioning, to logical and to honest debate. And when you start saying, well, I just believe that because, or, you know, God's ways are not our ways. That's the difference to me is I can sit here and articulate why I believe anything I believe. But if I just say, well, I just believe that because I think it's right, then that's not a valid argument for me, you know? So, I know. Yeah, we just don't do it as aggressively as the Scientologists do, because we still do it. I mean, I hear horror stories all the time from any different religion, any different denomination. You know, we're all people at the end of the day. We're all human, you know, and none of us are perfect. So,
and just before I move on, I'll give y'all who haven't watched the whole series from Leah on, and she was the chick in King of Queens, if anybody doesn't know who she was. She was the wife. Kevin James's wife in that show.
And she was in Old School. She was Will Ferrell's wife in Old School too.
Same. Right. So the upshot of Scientology is like there's all these degrees and levels that you progress to, and when you get to the highest one, they basically tell you you did so well, you get to start over at the bottom. And the only people that get there have literally invested millions of dollars to be told, okay, now you get to start over at level zero again.
Yes.
Because the journey's more important than the destination. And it's just like, oh, have I been ripped off? And well, I got to kick this can a little bit before we go. L. Ron Hubbard, who wrote Dianetics about a decade before he wrote it, he was a very prolific science fiction writer. I mean, this was a guy that would turn off, and not bad books, by the way, for science fiction, like, but, you know, like dime store novel thick science fiction books. He would write like one a week.
Right.
He just had that mind. It was something he was good at. And he was interviewed one time because he was successful before all this shit. And he said, well, you know, if I really wanted to make money, I'd start a religion. That's where the real money is. And at some point, like, it's one of those things, like a person says it and they're like, you know, maybe I should do that. But
yeah, I mean, you got to call it, you know, it's right there. It's right there for anybody that wants to see it.
Yeah. Let's move on from that before. I'm amazed we haven't gotten anybody upset yet. We probably
I didn't want to. I don't want to. You believe
I'm
going to
get the emails. You're not going to get them. I'm going to get the ones where you can hear the keystrokes from the anger. It's OK, guys. I won't get upset. I won't even tell you you're wrong. What are your goals now? Putting that piece of religion behind us, like what are you trying to accomplish from this point forward, and where are you on that path?
Well, I mentioned earlier I have custody of my kids, which is just I'll just say that's the way it needs to go. And so, you know, we're 2 years into this now where it's just the three of us. They're healthy. They're happy. We're all kind of back on our feet. We've all got our routines down. We've got our lives more or less pointed in the right direction now. We're renting a house, and my goal right now is I'm watching the market because I'm not going to – I bought two houses in a down market and one in an up market. I'm not buying in an up market again, you know. just – I'm not doing – the house that I sold in 2019, Jack, has gone up $400,000.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't pay that much for it, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not worth it. I'm not paying those. So my goal is to get – back on some property to start rebuilding my homestead, you know, to maybe find a new person in my life, continue to work on career goals and health goals. I'll mention too, I know you've talked a lot about the paleo diet.
Yeah.
I've been doing keto bore, lost 25 pounds. My blood pressure's down. My cholesterol's down. My blood sugar's down. I mean, all of that, you know, so making, health improvements and continuing to do that. And, you know, just moving toward to the future and onward and upward. That's what I'm calling this chapter of my life. Onward and upward, you know, getting back to the things that I had that I wanted and the new things that I never knew I wanted, or, you know, replacing the things that I used to want.
Cool, man. So can you maybe talk about some of the specifics though? Like what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I mentioned the diet thing. That's been, I've put a lot of time and effort into that because it's hard to change your lifestyle. It's hard to undo, you know, however many decades of eating poorly and all that. You know, I'm working on some career stuff too, trying to, you know, improve my career and advance that as well. After, you know, being out with the surgeries and losing my job, I had to start basically, you know, I was out of the workforce for a year, so I had to kind of start over there. And mainly just really prioritizing the things in my life, like trying to cut out the stuff that doesn't matter. You know, I deleted TikTok off my phone. I'm sitting there one night and I go, I've been looking at this stupid thing for 90 minutes. I deleted it because I don't need that, you know, and I still watch YouTube and all that, but I try to keep it to, you know, like an hour a day or less of my, you know, I'm trying to invest my time and my energy in the things that matter, not all the crap that doesn't matter. You know,
yeah,
like
YouTube
arguing with people
like
online.
A cigar, right? YouTube's like a cigar, and TikTok is like a freaking crack pipe vape. Like, I guess they haven't made that yet, but it's like a vape pen for crack, because it's just on and on and on and on.
Yeah, and YouTube, you know, most of, I'd say 90% of what I watch on YouTube is something that's teaching me something,
yeah.
You know, or something that's interesting, at least history or something like that. Whereas TikTok, it is all just pure candy that rots your teeth, you know, that's all it is. But, you know, continuing to learn and learn new things. And, you know, like I used to DJ when I was single. I just recently started doing that again. I'm like, hey, I need to get out of the house. I like doing it. I'm trying, you know, I'm rediscovering things that I had forgotten about myself from years ago that you don't even, over time, you don't even realize you give up. You know, like I had this great entrepreneurial spirit when I was in my teens and 20s. And then when I got married, and it's not her fault. I'm not blaming her for that, but you kind of start, let some of that stuff go. So I'm kind of rediscovering some of that old stuff again, you know, got back into riding motorcycles with my buddies and just honestly, Jack, trying to, you know, and watching my dad, he went from working full time to dead in 2 years. That dementia moves so fast. And that is something else that I thought about that, you know, that really hit me. He had a 3 lifetimes worth of projects left, right? He's going to do this and do that. And it kind of made me realize, okay, we're well past the second half here. You know, let's start concentrating on what's important and make the most of the years you have left. And it just really bringing everything into focus, you know, and stop wasting time, stop wasting energy, money, and just really focus on all the things. I'm dying to get my hands in a garden again. I'm dying to get some chickens again. You know, I loved it. I loved going out there with my kids and doing all that stuff, you know. And it was just such a wholesome, healthy way of life. I want all of that back, plus all of the new relationships, the new people, new ideas, just trying to improve my life, you know. And you only get one spin on this earth as far as we know. And I'm really trying to make the most of it at this point.
So you kind of left the community, I guess is a way to say, I don't know, left, because there's no real formal way to leave the TSPC community. You can send me an email, tell me I suck and never come back. I guess that would be as close as it gets. You just kind of drifted out. And, you know, if you're dealing with shit, sometimes that really happens. But you've kind of rejoined and gotten active again. What brought you back?
Well, again, it's like you said, you know, if somebody's standing on your hand, you're not worried about the other hand or the throat. And it's, you know, I had more than I could handle going on in my life. So I didn't have the time or the energy to do any of the things that I wanted to do or had been doing, including, being a part of the preparedness community. So it wasn't a conscious decision to leave. It was just my attention. All of it was elsewhere. And as I kind of came out of that funk and came out of that period where I'm trying to figure things out and get back to my feet. And once I got back to my feet and started looking around, you know, like a lot of the stuff we've talked about, and I went, I really, in my heart of hearts, feel like there is so much going on right now. And you said it on a recent show I listened to. You said I'm paraphrasing. You said basically the American experiment is over. We are in the collapse.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't realize it. And that's really how I feel. Like I, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I still had some faith in the political process. I have none now. I think the system is so corrupt. I think everybody's out to line their own pockets. And even if even the ones who do have some kind of ideological commitment, They're still looking out for number one. Well, long before they are me or you, they don't care about us. And the war stuff going on. I mean, and then, how much have we, how much have we been involved in the war in Ukraine? Why are we involved in the war in Ukraine? You know, you have to, the stuff that's going on with Israel and Hamas and the Houthis and the Red Sea and China and the tens of thousands of Chinese nationals pouring across our border every day that we have good evidence that the Chinese government is sponsoring this. I don't know if you saw the interview with Brett Weinstein where he went down there and put his eyes on all of this. And
I saw it, yes.
I mean, it's just, Jack, you could just go on and on and on. And now, you know, the World Health Organization is talking about limiting free speech if there's another pandemic so there's no dissonant opinions. I mean, this is insanity. We are living in insane times. All you have to do is stop and look around a little bit, You know, I mean, is it going to be an EMP strike? Is China going to put enough people in here and then attack our grid? And then they've got, you know, 50,000 Chinese military nationals living here. I mean, that was their plan with Russia. If they had to go into Russia after World War II, they were going to surrender their POWs and then have an uprising from within. This has all been spelled out. You know, I don't want to get too far off into crazy.
No, and it doesn't have to be crazy, and it doesn't even have to be that.
Right.
So, like, if I'm China and I want to influence the United States, what better way than to get about a million Chinese into the United States? The whole thing with TikTok, they're collecting your data. Everybody's collecting your fucking data. And everybody that wants your data can buy your data from a U.S. company that will happily sell it to them no matter who you are. And if these assholes actually wanted to fix the problem, instead of banning a website and an app, they would say, if you sell user information to a foreign government, you go to federal prison for 50 fucking years. It would be a bill. You could write it on one sheet of paper. Nobody would object to it, and it would be done. They don't want to fix the problem. They want to.
No.
It's a that one is a it's like a trap, right?
Yeah.
It's for TikTok, but then it's, well, we think X is interfering with the election, so now they're banned. It's dictatorial power to ban at will anything you could say did a thing you don't like.
Right.
And but what's the real subversion of TikTok of the American people is the algorithm and having control of the algorithm. If you have control of the algorithm, then you can start to bend opinion any way you want at any time. And you don't you don't have to hire Harry Sisson to tell you that Joe Biden's great, right? You don't have to do any of that stupid shit. There will be enough material there of every viewpoint that the algorithm can shape opinion without actually interfering with the creators, only interfering with which creator you see and when you see them and how often you see them. That's the subversion. And I see a lot of this stuff of foreign governments getting people into this country more that way than they're going to all, you know, rise up, grab a scimitar and start chopping people. Right. Like I think that could happen. But I also think in this country, if you do that, you're going to get your ass shot in a dirt nap really fast.
Right.
And it's not a good plan. It will not work out well for you if you do it, especially like in certain states. I'm just going to say, like, don't do it in places where people routinely own backhoes and excavators.
That's right.
They're not even worried about you smelling bad after it's over. Right. Like
that's
right. The thing about Asia's culture is they're far more strategic than we are.
Yes.
And because we don't like a lot of things about them, we tend to think saying anything they're better at is a dumb idea. No, you need to know what your enemy's better at. They're way more strategic. Mm-hmm. When I think about like the Star Trek universe versus the world, I see the Chinese very much like the Romulans. They're just always basically three steps ahead. Right. They can't win a fight, but they can win a war. Right. And that's because they're more strategic. And one side follows the rules that they give themselves, and the other side follows the rules of war and the rules of strategic negotiation and the rules of using the rules of your opponent against your opponent,
right?
Twisting their own rules back on themselves. You want to open the border? Fine. We're going to send our fucking people in. You want to say they can apply for asylum? You know what? I guarantee you there's Chinese citizens coming into the United States through our southern border right now and our northern one. We always forget about that much bigger border.
Right.
And they can prove that they are literally dissidents from China.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're a dissident now. Here's a plane ticket. Right? It's not hard to do this. We're so stupid. You'd have to be dumb to think somebody wouldn't take advantage of it.
Right.
Or if I'm a South American or a Central American country and I'm, you know, reestablishing the rule of law in my country and I have people I want to get rid of, you're a dissident, go to America, here's a bus ticket.
Right.
Like, you think all these people are walking here?
From China,
From South America.
right.
I'll tell you why you're insane. I lived in Panama for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've driven down the highway that heads toward Colombia. And before you get to Colombia, you get to a big giant jungle and the highway stops.
Right.
There's no paths. There's no road. You don't drive from Panama to Colombia, and I've spent mm-hmm. time in that jungle, and without real support, you don't fucking walk through it.
Right.
It's littered with bodies, right? From people who try to do.
From, you know, yeah. you could, I don't believe it, but you could walk from El Salvador or Panama or Costa Rica or Nicaragua to the United States. You are not walking from South America to the United States. You have got to leapfrog somehow.
Right.
And you ain't
right.
walking here yeah. from China.
No, definitely not.
Right. You ain't walking here from China. You ain't walking here from Haiti. And you ain't walking here from Sudan.
Right.
Right. Like, none of that's a thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was, the Shucks in the Jungle you're talking about, you know, Weinstein was talking about that, how it's littered with bodies and from people who do try to go through there on their
yeah.
own. I mean, half the people that try it die. They die from exposure, whatever, you know. It's the fact that they're trying to sell us this bill of goods, you know, that we're going to believe all of this stuff, you know, just like Biden doesn't have any cognitive decline at all. Okay. I'm not even arguing there's no cognitive decline. Okay. All right. Can we just be real for a second here? You know, but if you think about it, Jack, you think about the average American and then think about how half of Americans are stupider than that. It's really, oh, yeah. you know, I mean, we're so gullible, and I don't know why. I think that people need to pay attention, but so much. So we all fall into that trap of all the distractions, the TikToks and the vacations and the booze, alcohol, whatever it is, you know, and it's just easier to just kind of keep your head in the sand than it is to start paying attention to all this crazy, scary stuff that's going on.
Well, and what better way to get the American people to do what the American people do at a higher level, which is ignore shit, than to make right. their life so fucking hard, right, that they right. don't have time to pay attention.
Right.
Right. You know, I think about, like, you know, my son and daughter-in-law do okay, but when I think about, you know, the amount of money the two of them make together, raising two kids, what the cost of living is today versus when I was raising him, I'm like, I get it. It's hard. And if yeah. you, and they're in their 30s and they've had some time to establish and they bought their house 8 years ago. And if you're 24 or 25 right now, you got your first good job out of college or after coming up through the working class, I can't even imagine what it's like right now. And of course, that person's not paying attention to politics. And you'd say, well, that's the person that should. No, they're worried about if their kid's going to eat tomorrow.
That's right.
And if they're worried about, can I leave the air conditioner on 76? Or will it mean that I can't pay the electric bill this month?
Right.
That's where they're, right. they don't have time to actually, they might tacitly pay attention, but that means you either listen to Fox News or you listen to CNN, and neither one's going to tell you the truth, right? They don't have time, literally do not have it, to actually understand these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, all the main media, everybody's pushing an agenda. Fox has their agenda that, you know, most of the other ones have the other agenda, not, you know how that goes. But yeah, it's exactly that. And then the whole inflation thing. I mean, hell, I'm a single dad with a single income now. I mean, my God, just grocery shopping is killing me. And yeah. it is everybody else too. I know yeah. it's not just me. I'm paying $600 more a month to rent a house than I pay for my homestead on a house payment, on a mortgage. It's insanity.
Totally.
You know,
yeah. People are renting one bedrooms near me now for more than I pay for my 4-bedroom, 2,500 square foot house because yes. I bought it 10 years ago and got a 3% interest rate.
I had 2.9, but man, you know, I hate to get that thing up.
yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know. And that's what people were saying earlier. If I move again, it's going to be epic. I'm like, you ain't getting me out of here with dynamite, man. I'm not going nowhere.
Man.
Like, well, I'm going to hang on by my fingernails before you ever get me out of here because I can't do anything. I can make a lot of money if I sell it, but all I can do is turn around, buy something that's about the same, and then pay more every month for it.
And then rebuild all of the infrastructure that you've been building for 10 years. You know, I only had about 6 years worth that I had been working on, you know, but leaving all that behind, I got to redo all of that. Why would you do that? I mean, if you can go make $1 million, you know, maybe, but it's just not worth it because moving sucks, redoing all of that stuff, all the, you know, permaculture stuff you've done and all of that. I mean, it takes you another 10 years to redo it.
The only thing that ever even makes me remotely think about it is the climate.
Yeah.
You know, it's a brutal climate. And I'm not talking about for growth. I'm talking about for living. Like,
right.
Right. We're about to hit April, and that's when, you know, swirling swirling clouds try to kill you for 60 days. Mm-hmm. And then when those stop, then the sun tries to kill you for about 90 days.
Right? Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
So that's the only reason. But even when I do, when I really think about it, I'm like, you know, our kids are here, our grandkids are here, our, my son's here, our daughter-in-law, family, extended family's here. And it just, there's no way it'll ever happen.
Yeah, it's just too much. It's too hard. And, you know, I probably never would have left where I was. But that's the thing, though. And something else I've learned, you know, through all of this is that I think we're all more resilient than we give ourselves credit for. You know, I think that you can adapt to things. Doesn't mean it's easy, but you can do it. You can do it, and you can get yourself back on track, so to speak. And then it's a hard thing to go through, but, you know, just having the mindset that you can do it and knowing that you have the skills and you have the abilities and that you can, if you did it once, you can do it again. You know, I'm hopeful for the future, Jack. And that's I couldn't say that 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause I was in the thick of it, but we can survive. And the more prepared you are mentally, physically, whatever, the better off financially, the better your chances are of surviving.
Tough. Yeah, and I'm like you. I'm going to go through a few of these things on your notes here.
Sure.
That you're concerned about in the future. But I'm optimistic. People say, you paint such a bad view of the picture, but you're an optimist. How's that work? I'm not optimist for everybody else.
Right.
I'm optimistic for me and anybody who sees it coming that is taking the time and the steps to prepare for it, because a crisis for others is an opportunity for the prepared.
Right.
You know, that the more prepared you are, and if the crisis comes and it doesn't directly hit you, well, then you can do things. Like I drive a car right now that would cost me to buy it today about $42,000.
Mm-hmm.
I paid $24,000 for it, and they will literally pay me more for the car right now than I paid for it almost 4 years later with about 20,000 miles on it.
Isn't that crazy?
But I was able to buy that car because when the crisis came and everybody went, oh, shit, I just went, okay. And then Dodge went, oh, shit, and said, hey, we're selling Challengers. Pick your color for $24,000, and I said, I'll take the blue one. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where a crisis for others is an opportunity for the prepared. People made billions. There's billion-dollar companies still in business today that were built in the middle of the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm optimistic for anybody that says, let's go. Whatever it is, let's go. Because what's happened in the prepper space to be is we've had too many books like Patriots that
paint
this picture, this prepper porn picture of all the cities burn to absolute ashes. Some dude in Nashville becomes president of half the country, and the Belgians come and gas everybody. It's just stupid. No collapse in history has ever looked like that.
Yeah.
You know, but there's been a lot of collapses in history at the same time. And the collapse I'm most paying attention to right now is right in your notes, and it's the sovereignty of the dollar. And what are your thoughts on that, since that's your notes?
Well, we have enjoyed, since post-World War II, we have enjoyed the most bountiful and free-flowing capital era, in my opinion, from my knowledge, that in history, you know, especially in America. We've had the advantage of the American dollar being the world reserve currency for, you know, since post-World War II. And, you know, we're already, that has been declining with the BRIC countries, you know, and the oil trade that's going on outside of the U.S. dollar. But as we continue to run up this credit card, you know, with our national debt, and like you said, when the service of the debt becomes greater than the national defense budget, I mean, if that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what's going to, you know. So we're spending ourselves into oblivion. We're creating money. I saw somebody yesterday that said corporate profits are pushing inflation. Really? Have you not heard about quantitative easing and fractional reserve banking and fiat currency and money printing? And I mean, really, corporate profits? I'm not saying corporations are angels by any means, but, you know, that's not what's driving the majority of inflation. It's the fact that we're printing money left and right. We're trying to prop up all these wars. We're giving all this money to everybody all over the world. It's just not sustainable. It's just not. And it goes back to what you said earlier. You know, 10 years ago, they're going to load the tables up. Everybody's going to make as much. I don't think we're going to, I don't believe that we're going to get another opportunity after this one. I don't think the tables are going to reset.
Not that one. It'll be different, right? There'll be lots of them, but it won't be that one. Like, the era of cheap money is gone.
It's gone.
It's gone. And it could have never been cheap in the first place. And that's how we got, you get the prices. So when people right now are saying interest rates on mortgages are so high, they're really not.
They're not. They're just high compared to what they have.
They're middle of the road decent. But what we did with cheap rates is artificially inflate the property value and the value of everything else. And now that rate combined with the accelerated price movement is crippling.
Exactly. It's just like the student loans. It's amazing that the amount people can borrow, the tuition would automatically match whatever people can. It's the same thing. You keep putting all this money in there and the price is raised. And at some point, though, that money is not real. You know, that money is it's an idea. It's not a piece of gold. It's not a box of 22 ammo. You know, it's just an idea. And you can only push that so far. And the whole modern monetary theory, I don't know, like I'm not an expert on modern monetary theory, but I know a little bit about it. And it's basically, you know, that debt is good. But that only works as long as you have capacity in the economy. Like once your economy can't account for that, then, you know, like people say government spending is good, it spurs the economy. Well, that's only true in certain circumstances. We're way beyond those circumstances now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see how our financial system can continue like it is. I just don't. Especially with the interest. I mean, yeah, like you said, in the 70s, Carter, interest rates were 20%. You know, I mean, so 7's a deal compared to that, but 7 sucks compared to 3%.
Every time I find some shortcutted bullshit when I'm doing remodeling on this house, I just remember it's built in 1978. And then I don't cuss about it because it's like, of course it does. And you knew that when you bought it. Right. You know, if you bought a house from 1976 to 1982, if it was built in that space, it was built as cheaply as it could be because that interest rate ranged anywhere between 14 and 22% with an aggregate average across that period of 18%, and you're bitching about 7 or 6.
Right?
Like,
because that money you're spending on interest is money you can't spend on principal on a better house or a bigger house or a nicer house or whatever. You're just spending more of your house payment on interest, you know? Yeah. So I think our days of being the big dog, it's not over yet, obviously. I mean, we're still the reserve currency, but that we are steadily chipping away at that foundation. And
so
think about how
this happened. So in 71, Nixon temporarily took us off the gold standard. And a lot of people today are too young to know anything about that because they certainly don't teach it in school. And they certainly don't teach it in like university economics. But the scapegoat was France, but there were a lot of other countries doing it. France was just doing it more than anybody else. They were taking all U.S. dollars that came into their possession and going, give me the gold.
Right.
And people say, well, that was economic war declared by, you know, Charles de Gaulle and whatever the other guy's name was that was president at the actual time against the United States.
Right.
No, they were doing it because we were cheating and they damn well knew we were cheating.
That's right.
We had already started to issue more coupons than prize, right? Like you take the coupon, you turn it in, you get the gold. So we were already unbalanced. So they said, well, if you're going to do this, saw it off. And so people act like this all happened in 71. This was going on for about 8 years of the 60s, from about 62 all the way up into 71. Mm-hmm. And we kept doing a little bit more and a little bit more, and they kept stacking more and more of the gold. And basically transferring the hard money wealth from the United States against our coupon, which we called the dollar. And if we actually had the reserves, it wouldn't have been a problem. It was only a problem because we didn't. Now, what stops the other, like, you know, G7, G20 nations today from going, yeah, this dollar experiment's over. And all the dollars that come into their hands, they put in some other form of hard money, be it Bitcoin, be it gold, be it commodities, be it pushing it together in some kind of collective currency, be it a mix of all three. And it's what I would do. And personally, it's what I have done. I have moved all my surplus capital into things like Bitcoin or tools or real property or gold and silver because I don't trust the dollar anymore. Now, if a redneck farmer's doing that, you know, China might, we do that too, right? Like, I mean, come on. And Russia's,
right.
To me, Russia's way smarter economically than China. China jumped all in with us in this game. Russia's really not.
Yeah, they haven't. And it's, you know, coming off the gold standard, essentially for me was we just went to an Amex black with no limit. That's all we did.
Yep.
We gave ourselves an infinite credit limit. That's all we did with coming off the gold standard.
And we have basically two cards. We got the black and the black and blue. And whenever the balance got too high, we just moved it to the other card and just flipped it back and forth over and over again by printing our own money to pay our own debt and our own interest.
Right.
You can't do it forever, and it's been 50 years.
It's been 50.
It's 50 years.
I remember in about probably 2009, maybe 2010, I used to listen to Glenn Beck a lot, and I remember him saying that we are going to have to go through the pain, and we're not going to go through it this time because we've been on the morphine drip of quantitative easing ever since the 08 housing crisis, and it's slowed and sped back up. But we were able to kick the can last time, right? I don't think we can kick it again, or we're not certainly not going to kick it another decade down the road. And as soon as there is a better option than the U.S. dollar for these other countries, that's what they're going to go to. The only reason they haven't done it is there's not a better option yet. But that's changing day by day. You know,
I think it's going to be Bitcoin. And this is why I think it was telegraphed by Trump recently. He was asked about Bitcoin and he's like, well, I don't mind it so much, but I trust the dollar, you know, and
right.
He said of other nations, I won't let them go off the dollar.
Right.
When the fuck did we decide we were going to let anybody make a decision with what they do with their central banking and their economy? Like, we have this weird-ass belief that we really can use our combination of hard and soft power to make any country anywhere do anything we want.
Right.
And it is not our adversarial nations that we think of, like Russia and China, that will do this first. It's the ones we think of as our lackeys.
Right.
Our vassal states in our empire. It will be France. It will be Germany. It will be the UK. Right? UK will probably be the last to go because we have such an incestuous thing going on there. But and then like these nations in Africa, South America, Central America, they're starting to wake up and go, all this shit they supposedly they've done nothing for us. Why do we care what they think?
Right.
You know, and so I see like the sovereignty of the dollar being heavily, heavily threatened. And I don't think the average person even knows what that means to them. Like, how does that impact your life? They have no idea. Because, like I said, they're so busy. Like, can I afford my grocery bill at Walmart and feed my kids this week to even look at it, let alone comprehend it?
Right. They don't have the time or the energy to get, you know, to think about that other stuff. And I think that is somewhat by design. I'm not going to say how, you know, all by design or whatever, but you've talked about this plenty. Yeah, you've talked about this plenty. This is they don't want the proletariat paying attention. Don't look behind the curtain. You look over here at, you know, who's got talent or whatever and the grocery prices. You worry about that. Let us handle all this. And here's the thing that this is what hit me. Like you asked me earlier, why did I kind of what brought me back into this, you know, back into the community, so to speak. And it was, I went, there's no adult in charge. There's nobody at the wheel. There's nobody up there driving this ship. It's chaos. And that is a scary proposition. You know, even in the 90s, you know, when Clinton and Bush and all that, you kind of still felt like there were some adults up there who kind of were doing the right thing or trying to. I don't feel any of that anymore. I think this is an absolute farce. You know, we just descended into chaos. Is a scary place to be.
Yeah.
Very.
And, you know, basically, you know, what the whole plan is from a story from the 1800s that got made into a movie in the 1930s, The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And when they made that movie, people say it wasn't because of the real meaning, and it's not really the real meaning. It was because they were going to use Technicolor and silver wouldn't show up on gold. But in the book, Dorothy slippers were not ruby.
Mm-hmm.
They were silver.
Mm-hmm.
So Dorothy put on the silver slippers and walked down the yellow brick road to get to the Emerald Green City. where right. the man behind the curtain had the illusion of power, but no real power.
Right.
If I have to explain to anybody what that was really about, you know, other than I guess, you know, most people don't know something that was called the Crime of 1873, which was the demonetization of silver.
Right, and, right.
I can't remember the guy's name, but it was something Bryant or something that was known as the Cowardly Lion. That was the one that pushed that bill through Congress, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, there's a cowardly lion in the story, right? So, like,
right.
This isn't a new problem. It's just a problem that's evolved. And the reason I even went there is, you said, I'm not sure it's all by design. I think it's all by design, but let's not overcredit these maniacs with actually getting the design right as they go. Anybody's ever designed anything, if you design it and you go, oh, it does this thing. And it doesn't do this thing, but it does this thing. So I'm going to channel this thing this way. Oh, now it does this. And you keep playing mm-hmm. with it as you go. And I think it's more like a happenstance on the fly, continuous design. And the longer they do it, the more they know what the results will be, including when they know, well, this is coming to an end. So now we have to prepare society for the next way that we control them. Right. And the goal is always, whatever the next one is, will it shut everybody up long enough to get it installed? And will it have greater control for us?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't always work, but that I think that's always the angle.
Yeah, I agree completely. The clear obviousness of that movie and the whole message beside it, you know, and I was also reminded with the whole, other than a Pink Floyd video, you know, when you watch Dark Side of the Moon with Wizard of Oz, but it's absolutely all right there to see. All you have to do is pay attention, you know, but so many people don't want to or aren't capable of paying attention or however you want to put it, you know, and it's up to us to take care of our friends, our family, our people, ourselves. It's up to us to take care of our community because the government's not going to do it for us, you know. And even though I don't have my homestead right now, I got a group of people and we've got a property that, you know, if we had to get out of town real quick, we've got some kind of contingency plan, you know. And I think that's just, you just have to take care of your own business in every aspect because the government's not going to do it for you. Certainly not now, you know. I mean, less every day. I think that they're going to take care of anything, any of our needs.
So what you ended with on the stuff you sent me to be on the air was resistance tears us down like weight training. So we rebuild stronger. How does that apply to the kind of the shitstorm that you went through?
Well, it certainly tore me down. But you know, that's exactly how weightlifting works. It makes your muscles weak and then they build back stronger. And it's just all of those, just all of that stuff. Like I learned so much. I learned what I did right. I learned what mindsets I had right, which, you know, for example, being prepared, having some money in savings, getting out of debt, you know, starting to learn to grow my own food or starting to grow my own food. You know, I mean, we were giving away eggs every day because we had more than we needed and, doing the gardening stuff. So all of that has been reinforced. Okay. I need to do all of that again. I think one of the things that I've learned is, that's been most profound for me is the willingness to, meet new and different types of people and be open to different types of friendships and relationships. And it's like the more diversity you have in your peer group and your friends group, it just exposes you to different ideas. And, you know, I was a little bit of a, growing up, a little bit of a closed-minded redneck. But, you know, that was in my teen and early 20 years. I'm almost 50 years old now. I don't see the same things, the way I did then. And a lot of that change, you know, some of the most profound stuff has come in the last few years. You know, if like, for example, if I saw somebody that was struggling financially, you know, I might be apt to think, well, you know, they don't have their act together. Well, guess what? Now I've been through it and I see that life can happen to you. I'm not judging anybody anymore. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. Dude. It's just my whole mindset on all of that stuff. You don't know what people are going through. It doesn't cost you anything to be supportive or give an encouragement or help out a neighbor. I mean, all of that kind of stuff has just been amplified with me. And a lot of that stuff that I've seen things that I've done in the past that have come back to me later in some positive aspect. And that's not why you do it. But the fact is karma, call it whatever you want. You know, when you put good things out into the world, I think that more good things come back to you, you know, and just ideas like, you know, I remember you used to say all the time, one of your phrases was, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but it's something about, you know, when a man plants a tree or a woman plants a tree that they know they'll never sit under the shade under, stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. like one of the things that I try to do is did I put a little bit more good in the world today than I took out of it? You know, and if I feel like I was a net positive at the end of the day to my kids, my family, my friends, strangers on the street, people I interact with at work, whatever. I mean, it's just, it's like once you start getting in a kind of a positive mind frame and get out of the shit storm and the negativity and all that, it's just every aspect of my life, I've just figuring so much stuff out about myself and just really focusing on what's important. You know, it's just been a process and it's not all been fun, but it's been a very productive thing. And, I mentioned ago, somebody said, well, how are we hopeful about the future with all the crap that's going on? Well, I'm not hopeful for the future of the world. I'm hopeful for the future of me and my circle, you know, because I think that we're building my community, basically, you know, the people that are in my circle. So
is there anything you look back when you were in a place where you felt pretty good that you might have done differently that would have made getting through those disasters easier or better?
I was a fairly, I've always been kind of introspective, you know, and like examining myself. I think I would have done more of that and really like got deeper in the questioning my own, some of my own thoughts, my own thought processes, my own opinions, you know, just seeking even more knowledge and learning more things. You know, I wish I had done a little more in the financial area. I mean, we did some good, but being more financially prepared, having other contingencies in place, like we had the food thing. You know, we had good food preps and all that. But after I moved, you know, from South Georgia to North Georgia, I was still rebuilding my networks and all that. I would have put a little more effort into building community more, you know, around me. And I've done a lot of that since then. Trying to think if there's anything else that really stands out. Not really. I mean, some of that stuff, some things you just don't know. You don't know till you know. You don't know what you don't know, you know. But I would say just the whole mindset and the whole idea of being in the I'm going to improve my life, whether things get tough or even if they don't. And TikTok, the clock is ticking every day. Like I've been thinking that one a lot lately, you know, and start looking, I got a birthday coming up. I'm like, holy crap, TikTok is right.
Yeah.
But just staying in that frame of mind and constant improvement, you know, constant reassessment and improvement.
And even though the clock's ticking and we get older every day, you've just relaunched a business. You don't tell people about that?
Yeah, just, I mean, it's just a little side thing, but, you know, I was a DJ in Savannah for several years and did it, you know, very successful at it. I mean, made a lot of money on the weekends. And I was thinking, you know, I kind of need to get out of the house a little bit. Wouldn't mind making some extra pocket money. It's something I love doing. So I said, you know, forget it. And one of the things, I had been toying with it, and I said, you know what? Order equipment. Now I got to do it. You know what I mean? Kind of the burn boats mentality.
Reverse toolbox fallacy. Instead of saying I can't do it because I don't have it, I'm going to invest in it. And now I got to do it because I got to do something with the stuff I spent money on.
Yeah, that's it. I said, I'm going to get it all set back up. And I got some gigs booked now. I'm looking forward to that because I enjoy it. I do it more for fun than anything. And just, you know, to get out of the house and meet people. But it doesn't hurt to make a few extra dollars either.
No, it does not.
Side hustle. So I that was I felt good about doing it. You know, like I did something I wanted to do that's fun that I can make some money at. So why wouldn't you do it? You know?
Yeah.
Just part of the rebuilding process, like the, you know, me 2.0.
You know, I just did a show yesterday about starting a business. And I said, I think to have full personal liberty in the future, you don't necessarily have to have a big going concern, but you probably are going to have some form of entrepreneurship in your life, some level that gives you that flexibility and some level of being able to tell people no to shit, right? Like the more money you make from your business, the less you need other money. And the more willing you are to say, well, that's nice that you said I had to do that thing, but I'm just not going to do that thing.
That's exactly
right. Well, then
right.
You're going to be fired. Well, then you go ahead and you do what you think you need to do because I'm not quitting.
Right, exactly.
You know,
and it's, multiple streams of income, you know, every extra, it doesn't matter what more multiple streams you have, the more security you have, you know, because I found out real quick, not only can they let you, not only will the big corporation fire you, they'll do you while you were literally going through the worst part of your entire life.
Yeah, they don't give a shit.
They don't give a shit. Yeah, I was a number to them, you know, and I knew that. And I mean, you know, I don't think I was a number to my immediate people, but to the company, you're just a number. You know, so you have to build your own life. You have to build your own resiliency, you know, and that's just, I mean, you've just pounded that into everybody's head for all these years. And, you know, I know there's so many other people out there like me, Jack, who have just taken, you know, the stuff I've heard from you and community members and just the whole preparedness community. And it really does make a difference when it comes down to it. You know, all of these things really do matter in the end.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you being with us today. You're on our Discord server as the Dude Abides with underscores between the words, and you've got your Facebook page for your DJ service and some stuff on Instagram as well. I'm going to go ahead and make sure all that stuff gets in the show notes for people if they want to connect with you.
Okay.
And thank you for reaching out and telling your story with us today.
Yeah, Jack, I appreciate you having me, and let's not wait 10 years to do it next time, all right?
I tell anybody who wants to be on the air, fill out the form.
Yeah, man.
I ain't gonna fill out the form. I'm like, Ron Paul filled out the form. Right? If Ron Paul filled out the form, you ain't got a chance.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But it was good. It's really good to come back and you know, kind of re look at things all these years later. And enjoy being here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. And Build of Castle says there is a Discord server. You can join. We have Telegram group and we have a lot of other places I'm active. All you got to do is go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on Get Social, and you can find all the different ways that you can connect with me, but more importantly, the larger TSP community. On that, as we wrap up here, I want to remind you guys that, you know, I do have this bioreactor composting course available now. And it again, everybody that's taken it has given us nothing but positive feedback on it. But I wanted to, instead of just showing you the page that I got up there now, I wanted to show you this. Look, this is what the fertility that we're teaching you how to build in this course does. This is a piece of longevity spinach that started out as a little cutting a few months ago. This is the one that's in the picture I've shown so many times. But this is 5 weeks later, and it's about time for it to go out in the garden. And all that is filled up about halfway, this cup is, with nothing but the bioreactor compost. It's never been given any fertilizer, any other treatment. All of it was stuck in water. If you want to learn how to grow food like this, that course is $40, and it's totally worth checking out. Next up, though, I want to remind you guys you can always help support our show without spending any additional money whatsoever by doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. I have, you know, affiliate relationships with Amazon and Vivor. There's all types of information on that page, too, about saving money on special deals and things like that and all types of ways you can just save some money or spend the money you're going to spend anyway, and you help us out. Today's item of the day isn't even really an item of the day. It's a deal of the day because I know it's going to be gone soon. And it's going to be gone soon because it's being marketed as refurbished by Anchor. And based on the condition of what I got, it is neither a return nor an actual refurbished. And they are no longer available at full retail. They're all marked refurbished. And what that means when Anchor does it, and I love Anchor. They're my favorite value electronics brand. You know, getting something that's as good as a top brand for half the money from a company that stands behind it, that's always a good deal. But these Soundcore Spirit X2 wireless earbuds, they're on sale for like $38. These are high-end, really great earbuds. But I'm going to tell you something weird about me right now. And I put it in the write-up today, too. I don't know any other way to put it. I have weird ears. I have never been able to get a set of Bluetooth earbuds that I can stick in my ear that don't just fall out. I have lost them in deep grass and found them with a lawnmower a year later. I have lost them in my garden ponds. I have lost them in places I don't know where they ended up. I have lost them everywhere. And I'd about given up, and I was wearing the big over-the-ear headphones, you know, from Anchor like that, which are fine in the house or something, but not good for working outside in the heat or, you know, hitting a heavy bag or whatever. And so when these popped up on sale, I bought them, and they're the ones that have the little hook that goes over the backside of your ear. And I've been using them for a couple of weeks now, and I'm totally happy with them. And that's why I'm willing to recommend them to y'all. But when I checked today, again, they're not available new anymore. And Anker has a habit of liquidating and calling something refurbished when they're liquidating the last of their stock, because they would still prefer that you buy the more expensive, newer model like any company would, but they also want it to slowly dissipate to zero. So if you want a set of these for under $40, I would get them right away. They come with a little charging case. You charge the case, and the case charges the earphones like so many things do now. Sounds fantastic. Functions fantastic, like everything Anker Bluetooth. You turn it on, and it hooks up. About the only time I've ever had them fail to hook up, they get to know a device pretty well, and I forget that I was using them on my laptop, and I hadn't shut the Bluetooth off. So before I get them connected to my phone, they connect it to the laptop, that type of thing. Otherwise, if you are in the market for something like this, get yourself a set of these. And then otherwise, like if you're going to shop online today, tomorrow, next week, next month, just go to tspaz.com first. It'll probably save you some money. You'll get brand recommendations and product recommendations you can trust from me, and you'll help me out no matter what you buy. With that, guys, take care. I'll catch you tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A, Friday flashback, and we'll do it all over again next week.
Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.